जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरा वनचारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ जय गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा राधा वृंदावन चंद्र राधा वृंदावन चंद्र राधे जय जगन्नाथ जगन्नाथ बलदेवा जय सुभद्रा मैया जय गौरनिताय 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 जय गौरनिताय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद
प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद
हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण इज इट लाउड एनफ We are very, very blessed and fortunate to have His Grace Shyam Sundar Prabhu amongst us. Many of you might have heard about him from the Prabhupada Leelamrita as Sam and Marjorie, Shyam Sundar Prabhu and Malati Mataji. It is like a historical character coming out of the pages of Prabhupada Leelamrita and coming in front of all of us. So when Mike and Jan when they went to San Francisco, one of the first people they met was Sam and Marjorie. And later on, Mike became Mukunda Swami Maharaj. So when he talks about Shyam Sundar Prabhu, he says that Shyam Sundar Prabhu was a very great friend of all the musicians in San Francisco. Tens of them, several of them. And he said the one prime quality of Shyam Sundar Prabhu that stands out amongst all his other good qualities is his friendly behavior. He can practically make friendship with anybody in the world. He was such a very big-hearted, kind-hearted person. So when Mukund Swami and Mike and Jan, when they put up the program, they gave a lot of glory and credit to him, Shyam Sundar Prabhu, because he brought major number of devotees to Krishna consciousness in San Francisco. And they all came to welcome Prabhupada in the airport with the rose in the hands. So, eventually, Shyam Sundar Prabhu became very attracted to Srila Prabhupada's personality and his devotion and dedicated his life. And you all know the three families who went to London, in that Shyam Sundar Prabhu and Malati Mataji, along with a small baby Saraswati also, they were in London preaching. In 1968, he traveled with the five chosen devotees to London where he made friendship with the Beatles, George Harrison. I heard that when George Harrison returned back to his office, he saw there were hundreds of people sitting, waiting to meet him. But then he spotted out Prabhuji. He saw him in Hare Krishna dress with a tilak mark. He straight away came to him and said, "You come inside." So directly he took him inside. And then he spoke to him and he told that he had gone to India and he had heard the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and he was very impressed. He also wanted to sing the Mahamantra and Prabhuji had so many things to say about Prabhupada and Mahamantra to him. He became very close friends with him. And in Prabhupada Leelamrita also you read, I have also heard from my spiritual master, how his friendship actually led to George Harrison making the Apple records, record which made a explosive development of ISKCON worldwide because of the Radha Krishna temple CD which went across the globe. Virally it went at that time and that's one of the reasons how our movement expanded very fast. So Shyam Sundar Prabhu has a very great hand in this. So Shyam Sundar Prabhu was born in Oregon in 1942. After graduating from Reed College in 1965, he met Srila Prabhupada in San Francisco in January 1967 and immediately he became a disciple of Srila Prabhupada Shyam Sundar Prabhu. In 1971, he became a personal secretary of Srila Prabhupada and traveled with him in Europe, USA, Africa, Asia, Australia and even behind Brezhnev's Iron Curtain Russia. So one of the specialities of Shyam Sundar Prabhu is his photographic memory. He remembers the interactions he had with Srila Prabhupada in such minutest detail. Even many times we make notes from the lectures, we are not able to grasp even after making notes. But Prabhuji remembers every movement, every word, every interaction with Srila Prabhupada so well, even after so many decades. Because he loved Prabhupada very fondly, and those are all recorded. Many of you might have got the first volume of Chasing the Rhino, the first volume. So Prabhuji has actually come here today for a very special purpose. He has brought the second volume of Chasing the Rhino book, which is as bulky as the first one also. But the speciality, he told us when I was in Chowpatty last week, when Paramahansa Raghunath Maharaj said, every devotee should have a copy, Raghunath Maharaj said. So, and I came to know that this book is exclusively about Srila Prabhupada returning to India with white elephants. And after that, in India, what Prabhupada did. That is the second volume, which means going to Surat and going to Bombay and the Chowpatty, you know, the Sadhu Samaj program, and subsequently, you know, establishing temple in Juhu and Vrindavan and Mayapur and different parts of India, and Prabhuji arranging the Cross Maidan festival. You all remember the famous statement that Srila Prabhupada said, what is the use of you being Americans if you cannot put up such a big festival in Cross Maidan? So that was ringing in their ears, and they actually did justice to that statement. By putting up a very huge festival. Every day the festival attracted 20,000 people for 10 continuous days. And that was the same Cross Maidan festival where two great souls were hiding in the crowd and who eventually met Prabhupada and became big spiritual masters in ISKCON. His Holiness Lokanath Swami Maharaj and His Holiness Rajanath Swami Maharaj. So thanks to Shyam Sundar Prabhu for assisting Prabhupada in putting up that big festival where we got some of the prominent spiritual masters of Pune here. So we are very thankful to him. And Malati Mataji, also needless to say about her, how much faithful and dedicated service she did for Srila Prabhupada. This is a very, very amazing family. And Shyam Sundar Prabhu is here with us. He will share something from the book with all of us today. And my sincere request to each and every devotee here, take a copy of this book. You may have the first volume. If you don't have the first volume, you can find out from our gift stall. And the second volume is especially about India. What you get in Leelamrit is a small portion of this book. Here he has elaborated in minutest detail about everything that Prabhupada told them and how they followed those good instructions, and they expanded on it. So I was hearing last week Prabhuji speaking in Chowpatty. It was so thrilling. We felt like the lecture go on for eternity. Because not only he writes so well the past times, he is a very good narrator also of the past times. So I would request Prabhuji to visit Pune again leisurely for a few more days, so he can go to different parts of Pune and give programs. So that he will only do if you all take the books. Along with him, he has brought 500 books. So if these 500 books get, it runs out of the stock now, then Prabhuji has to come again bringing another 500. So we would like to welcome Prabhuji to Sri Sri Radha Vandavan Chandra Temple. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Shyam Sundar Prabhu ki.
Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachari Nirvishesha Svanyavari Prasachada Satari. First of all, my deep gratitude to Radhe Shyam Prabhu. A couple of weeks ago in Mumbai, we had a nice dinner at the Desai House. Radhanath Swami spoke, and he said, wherever he goes, he meets the leaders to these nice new temples coming up everywhere, and all of them say to him, They were trained by Radhe Shyam. So many thanks to you, Radhe Shyam, for chasing the rhinos for Srila Prabhupada. And many thanks to Yugal Shyam and Revati Patti and Krishna Katha and all the wonderful devotees here in Pune at the Radha Vrindavan Chandra Temple. You are my real family. And my greetings and deep gratitude also to one of my dearest godbrothers, Burijan Maharaj. I saw yesterday for the first time. Is he here today? Are you here, Burijan? He's one of Prabhupada's stoutest warriors. He's still out there going strong. The last time I was in Pune, the only time I've ever been in Pune, it was about, I think, 15 years ago, 2005. We had a meeting at Krishnachandra Mafatlal's house here. And there were about 100 local Pune devotees. And I heard your plans then. Devotees were telling me they had all these plans to build big temples here and so on. I even went out and looked at a piece of land someone showed me they were looking at for a temple. And now I come here 15 years later and look what you have done. Ah, marvelous. It was a dream and now it's real. But most of all, my deepest gratitude is to Krishna. Yeah? For giving me this long life, I'm nearly 78 now, to recount and broadcast the inconceivable glories of my spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Swami. Ah, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who appeared in this Western world, 54 years ago, to plant the ancient seed of Krishna consciousness in a world gone mad. When Yugal Shyam gave me today's Srimad Bhagavatam canto, chapter, and verse, I was totally blown away by the coincidence. For the past many years, wherever I go in the world, I usually carry with me one volume of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I read them sequentially, about a half an hour every night before bed. I read in sequence. It takes me a year or two to go through the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. But it just so happens, he said, we are reading from 4th canto, 29th chapter, about King Puranjana. Well, so am I. What a coincidence that is. Of course, Krishna devotees don't see things coincident. There are no accidents in Krishna's world. Devotees call it Krishna's magic. So I know you're on chapter 29, but I pray you will forgive me today if I back up just a little bit to chapter 25. That's where I'm reading. Verse 13. Because this verse leads right into my talk to you today about Srila Prabhupada's amazing adventures in India and why he came here, the purpose and his mission in India. Many of you know the story. How it happened, how the Swami captured a few of us, and how in such short time the Hare Krishna culture exploded around the world, especially if you have read my volume 1 of Chasing Rhinos. How many here have read the volume 1? Can I see the hands? Oh, not so many. Okay. This is the early days of the Krishna movement. But do you know the real story of India? Here it is, volume 2. This is how it happened. One of my friends calls this the gospel according to Shama Sundar Das, because it details step by step everything Srila Prabhupada did here on his return to India with the Western devotees in 1970. And gave new birth to the Krishna movement in this country. A few months shy of 50 years ago, in October 1970, Srila Prabhupada arrived in Bombay, with 20 of his Western disciples. And the reason and the purpose of Srila Prabhupada's mission in India is stated very clearly in this fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapter 25, verse 13. And I'll just read you that. Once, while wandering in this way, he saw on the southern side of the Himalayas, in a place called Bharatvarsha, India, a city that had nine gates all about and was characterized by all auspicious facilities. Now, in the purport to this verse, we come to understand the following. A blind man can walk, but not see. And a lame man cannot walk, but can see. The blind man may take the lame man over his shoulder, and as he walks, the lame man may give him directions. Thus combined, they may walk, but individually, neither the blind man nor the lame man can walk successfully. For the past 2,000 years, India has been subjugated by the rule of foreigners, and the legs of progress have been broken. In the Western countries, the eyes of the people have become blind due to the dazzling glitter of material opulence. The blind man of the Western countries and the lame man of India should combine together in this Krishna consciousness movement. Then the lame man of India can walk with the help of the Westerner, and the blind Westerner can see with the help of the lame man. In short, the material advancement of the Western countries and the spiritual assets of India should combine for the elevation of all human society. So this partnership, the lame man of India and the blind man of America, Srila Prabhupada created this partnership. And this partnership is the reason and the purpose was and is the purpose of Srila Prabhupada's mission in India. In his first lecture in Bombay, Srila Prabhupada famously said, "Unfortunately, Indian people are so much bewildered that they are giving up their God-conscious culture. They want to imitate the West. My mission was that I shall go to America, and if some of the American boys and girls, the younger section, would accept it, then I'll bring them here to show these Indians that how great their culture is. That is my policy." I think it's important. Oh, most of you are very young, and you don't know what India was like 50 years ago. But I think it's important to pull your mind, your imagination back in time to October 1970. After nearly 300 years of domination, the British had just left India only 23 years before we came. And after 1,500 years of foreign domination, you are a new country. Your government and your economy are struggling to figure out how to manage yourselves, how to survive, how to stabilize in this new global age. 1970 was an experimental time There were shifting lines. Yeah. There was capitalism. There was communism. There was nationalism. There was socialism. The Indian government and economy were trying to find a system. You were inward looking. You weren't looking out yet. There wasn't much global outlook. In those days, there were 7.5 rupees to the dollar. But you could get 15 rupees on the black market. There was two parallel economies in those days. There were a few overseas Indian communities in some of the former British colonies. And there was some Indian community in Great Britain. But there were no Indians yet in America. Srila Prabhupada was the first Indian I ever saw in my life. Go back in time, imagine this. So into this land, struggling with new birth, India, comes one old man, 74 years old, and 20 foreign, inexperienced youngsters. We came here on one-way tickets. We had no money. And suddenly we were dropped into this very strange and exotic land. Our idea as young Americans about India was something like this. We imagined India as a place where these guys with cloth wrapped around their heads sat and played flutes and had a basket in front of them with a cobra coming out. This was our view of India. That there were yogis here who would make a rope go straight in the air and then they would climb that rope into the clouds. India was a land of magic for us. We could only imagine India. So here we are suddenly. So what a perfect historical moment, eh? That we came here, that Srila Prabhupada came. He came right at the birth of your country, right in this perfect historical window, the birth of a nation and the birth of Krishna consciousness in India. He called for us, the 20 of us, there were only a very handful of Western devotees yet in the world. And there were no communications, no emails, no cell phones. The only communication was by letter, post. So we were spread out all over the Western world, and we got these letters from Prabhupada, 20 of us, in different places, from Los Angeles to London, saying, meet me in India on October 1st, 1970. That was it. We had no idea what he wanted us to do. But our spiritual master told us to come here. Totally uncertain. We didn't even know each other, the 20 of us who came. I mean, I knew Gur Das and Malati and Jamuna. But that was it. I didn't know this new guy, Tamal Krishna, or this new guy, Giriraj. None of us really knew each other. We were 20 strangers, basically. But we had our common father. And in India, Srila Prabhupada was our commander-in-chief, our general. We didn't know how to do anything. He organized us with this ancient system of integrated knowledge that bound us together tight in certain rules of action. What Srila Prabhupada said to do, we did, applying our American ways of doing things here in India. Prabhupada had to teach us how to eat, how to dress ourselves, what kinds of medicines to take for our ailments, how to act, what kind of manners to have in India, how to open bank accounts, how to keep books. Prabhupada had to teach us everything. We didn't know anything. He was the master of all all aspects. He could do anything. Prabhupada could do anything. And against all odds, we became a very powerful force. Our little army of Western devotees with our American legs and our eyes opened by Vedic knowledge, we went on to accomplish in 2 short years what took huge armies of Mughals and Britishers, British troops, hundreds of years to accomplish. Srila Prabhupada raised Krishna's flag in India, and his message stormed across and captured the country. At our first big public meeting, this is early October 1970, was on Chaupati Beach, just a couple of blocks from where the magnificent Radha Gopinath Temple sits today. It was called the Bharatiya Sadhu Samaj. It was a meeting, a 10-day meeting of thousands of Hindu leaders from across India. All the way from the Naga Babas to the big guys with beards. But as soon as Prabhupada stepped on the stage with his 20 Western devotees, everyone forgot everyone else. We were the total center of attention. 10,000 people joined every day to see this amazing spectacle of this Indian Swami with his Western devotees. And Prabhupada did not mince words. Right away he said, human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits. While I am in India, all my disciples are coming here from different parts of the world. So these, my disciples, practically millions of people in Western countries are chanting Hare Krishna and taking up this, your Indian spiritual culture. Now you have forgotten. You want to be like them after money and motor cars. In 1,000 years, you could not have motor cars like they have got. Now they want Krishna. That is all. They want your spiritual treasure house, which you have neglected. This is your wealth, Bhagavad Gita. Why you do not give? This was an astounding message in India. So that night, we gathered in Prabhupada's room on Marine Drive, and Prabhupada told us the story that it's traditional in Indian society that when a Maharaj marries an English woman, has an English wife, they call her his white elephant. So Prabhupada turned to us and he said, now you are my dancing white elephants. Not loud enough? Well, immediately we were a citywide sensation. Srila Prabhupada saw the huge response and immediately decided to make Bombay his India headquarters. We hit the streets with Samkirtan every day, all around the Fort District and downtown Bombay. We were in newspaper headlines every day about these Hare Krishnas, magazines. Even in those days, the most famous Bollywood star was Dev Anand, his name. He came to see us. And so even the film magazines were filled with photos of the Krishna people. And we began to spread out. After 1 week, Srila Prabhupada called us together and said, we should stop this Sankirtan. What? He said, yes, here in India, if you do Sankirtan, people will think you are simply beggars like all the other spiritual groups. So then he introduced the Life Member Program. Oh, I should step back a bit because they asked me to talk about children. When we came to India, I brought my 2-year-old little daughter, 2 years old. Her name is Saraswati. So Saraswati. So wherever we went, little Saraswati came with us. either in my arms or in a little buggy. And she became the darling of Bombay. She was featured in headline photos every day in the newspaper. This little child with blonde hair chanting Hare Krishna. Whenever there was a public program, she would be dancing up and down the stage, and Prabhupada would ask her to speak. She could barely talk yet. She would go, take the microphone and go, "Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead," and run off. Srila Prabhupada loved her so much. For years, she traveled at his feet, sometimes in his lap. Whenever we went somewhere in a car, she sat right beside him. She came to see him every morning before everyone else. I would come in Prabhupada's room, and she would be sitting there yakking away with Prabhupada. When he first saw her, his first words, when she was 3 months old baby, he said, "Ah, hello there, old friend. Nice to see you again." Anyway, okay. So, life membership program. He said, "You go to the leaders of India and you enlist them as life members. And the cost will be 1,111 rupees. Now, that's equivalent maybe to 11,000 rupees now. So, even now, but especially then, that was a lot of money. So we had to go to the elite, the wealthy elite of Bombay, to make them life members. And we did what Americans do best, business and sales. We went to the office, we hit the streets, we broke up into teams of two men, and some ladies too. We would go to the offices of the biggest CEOs in Bombay, just barge in, uninvited, demand to see the boss. And people had been reading about us, so in most cases the doors open and in we went. And I teamed up with a boy named Rishi Kumar from New York City. He was a tough New Yorker. So it was kind of a good guy, bad guy act. He was the bad guy, I was the good guy. He would pound on the desk and say, "You must become life member." And I would say, "Oh, please forgive my God brother. He's only following his spiritual master's instructions. Please forgive him." And most men joined. They would, "Okay, my secretary will give you a check." And this was kind of funny. We promised them the moon. We promised them every book Srila Prabhupada ever wrote and would write forever. We promised that wherever they went in the world, they could stay in our elaborate centers all over the world, free of charge. Well, the truth of the matter is, we had no books. We only had a few personal copies. Books might be coming, but we didn't know when they were coming. And there were only maybe two temples in the whole world that had more than floor space to sleep on. But Srila Prabhupada always looked ahead. And he taught us to act like this, to go for it. Take big risks. Nothing is impossible. Have no fear. Chase the rhino. Chase the rhinoceros. So when we arrived in India, we expected to see Krishna everywhere. I mean, all we've been hearing about for years was Krishna. But when we arrived on Indian shores, we couldn't see Krishna anywhere. Where are the Krishna temples? Where are the Vaishnavas? I mean, here's Shiva. There's Ganesh. And who's that? The one with all the arms and the skulls around her neck. Well, that's Kali. And they said, "Oh, Kali. But where is Krishna?" I mean, there were a couple of Lakshmi Narayan temples with very few people in them. But Krishna wasn't there. And it's important that you have to understand this, what's happened in 50 years in your country. 50 years ago, Krishna consciousness was nearly extinct here. It's hard for you to imagine that, isn't it? Now, Krishna is the most famous god in India. There is Krishna Palace Hotel, Krishna Bicycle Shop, Krishna Sweet Shop. Everywhere you look in India now is Krishna's name. Right? It wasn't there before. It was 50 years ago. It wasn't here. This is what you have to appreciate about Srila Prabhupada, what he has done. So each night we gathered with Srila Prabhupada in his rooms. I'll just read a few passages from the book. Each night and each morning, each early morning, we would gather with Srila Prabhupada in his room, and we were his little band of children. We were mesmerized as Prabhupada spoke on those golden mornings over the raucous cawing of crows outside, the coo-coo cooing of pigeons in the courtyard. Changing expressions moved across his golden face like the play of cumulus and sunlight over a varied landscape. One moment he was from our world and the next from a world we couldn't penetrate, the self-contained knower of everything. Then suddenly he's tossing a ball to you in a friendly game of verbal catch. Maybe a fastball to see if you can catch it. He might break from describing Krishna's vast cosmic design to a real concern for your upset stomach. Just try a little bicarbonate of soda, one spoonful in water. But in the daytimes, we were his little band of pirates, his business team hitting the streets of this exotic city to make life members. It was all so new and strange, this stomping around in this extremely foreign land. During those early weeks in Bombay, I sometimes asked myself, "What are you doing here?" But soon the relish of our daily work erased these thoughts of other places and other things I might be doing, and I was seized by a strong desire to outshine my godbrothers in pleasing Srila Prabhupada. Thinking of Prabhupada who waited at home for my spectacular report, I'd pick up the pace and run to my next appointment. One life member gave me a car. We needed to move around a little bit more on our own, and the roads weren't as crowded in those days, so he gave me a car. He wanted to give me a driver also, and I said, "No, no." It was a 1952 Chevrolet coupe, an American car. I used to have a 1952 Chevrolet myself. So I said, "No, no, I don't need a driver, I can drive." And Prabhupada vouched for my driving skills. So here I would fill the car with devotees every day and drop them off in various places to make life members in Bombay. I'll just tell you one funny incident with this car. I was driving very slowly down by Crawford Market, crowded Crawford Market in Mumbai, with this big car. And I'd heard all these stories that if you hit someone with your car, or if you hit a cow in India, that the people will kill you. They will just stone you to death. So I was very careful, driving very slowly, like 2 miles an hour. And suddenly this old man jumped in front of the car and boom, I hit him. I saw him go flying. So I shut off the motor and I put my head down on the steering wheel thinking, now I'm going to die. I heard a lot of shouting, so I opened my eyes and I got out of the car, and they had taken the old man over to the sidewalk. And women were beating him with their purses. and pointing at me and going, saying, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And I got it. They were angry with him for getting in the way of a sadhu. So I thought, now this is India. I am beginning to understand. Gradually we began to understand. Our mood as strangers here, we were pretty good at business, but we had so much fun. Fun was what kept us going. I'm talking about Srila Prabhupada here. Prabhupada quoted shastras one moment and told a joke the next. Laughter was our constant companion around Prabhupada. Joy in this wild adventure of devotional service. Life with Krishna is fun, playful, and full of juice, Prabhupada often told us. And it certainly seemed like the characters and events we experienced in India were straight from a cosmic comedy. Nothing is accidental, he said. It is Krishna's play. And to us, it all seemed so funny. So within a short time, the Hare Krishnas became a national sensation, and offers started pouring in. Srila Prabhupada took a bunch of devotees up to Amritsar, and then Indore, and then Surat. In December 1970, we went to the town of Surat. Surat, probably much different these days, but it was the first time that we saw an entire town of Krishna devotees. Finally, we're seeing Vaishnavas. Hundreds and thousands of Vaishnavas came out to greet us in Surat. They closed off the town streets, the main streets of the town, and erected a pandal at the intersection of the two main roads for Prabhupada to speak every night for 10 days. Wherever we did Sankirtan up and down the streets of old Surat all day, every day, and thousands of people came out to greet us with throwing rice and flowers and inviting us in their homes. And we began to think, this is the real India. This is what we were trying to find in India. Let's see, I've got one little. The entry into Surat immediately gave us the sense that we were doing something historic. This was a real first. Something that had never happened before. Our Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, was unique in history, leading His tiny foreign army on a friendly crusade into deepest India. We began to see Prabhupada as a great saint here in His homeland, relaxed, the true spiritual father of India, taking His place on the balcony to address flushed and exciting devotee crowds like the Pope at St. Peter's. His forehead plastered with sandalwood paste, the rooms and halls behind him suffused with the aroma of gardenias and tuberoses. Srila Prabhupada was loving it, and we were loving him more each second. To see our father, our best friend, our master, so well treated, so revered by a whole city, it made us dizzy with new realizations. Prabhupada was a saint. And we realized, too, what the world might be like if everyone became a devotee of Krishna. So from Surat, we went to Kumbh Mela. I know everyone knows what is Kumbh Mela here. Millions of people gather for nearly a month at the confluence of Jamuna and Ganges rivers. Millions. And we had our camp there also, a big pandal. And after 1 month among all these millions of pilgrims, Srila Prabhupada's Krishna, Krishna tent was the most popular of all. Each night, Prabhupada spoke strongly about Krishna as a person, and Indian people began to really take note of this. Srila Prabhupada mentioned afterwards that he defeated all Mayavadi philosophies at Kumbh Mela and put India back on its feet as the devotees of a person, a supreme person. I loved Bombay so much from the first day I arrived there. It seemed to me so familiar, almost like I had been there before. It was very much like unspoiled 1940s America to me. We had so many jokes. Shall I tell some of the jokes? We were just young boys and girls mixing together. All of us were developing a real fondness for the Bombay people. You might say, even say we were starting to love them. Their endearing qualities and gentle manners were such a far cry from Western skepticism and rude me-first behavior that sometimes it felt like we had arrived from the future into a past when people were more innocent, connected by social graces, and showed their thanks by giving small gifts. But as young Americans, we often shared the joy at our own way of life by making jokes that sometimes bordered on the sacrilegious. Hey, Gurdas, I found out what that red stuff is in all the stairwells, you know, in the office buildings. Yeah? It's spit, man. These guys spit betel nut juice on the way up and down the stairs because it's dark in the corners. Or, hey, I met a guy today. He says the Indian Army has invented an atomic hand grenade. And I said, well, how far can you throw it? Or do you see those vultures circling around that hill? They say the Parsi people put their dead in a big pit up there and let the vultures eat them. Or, have you seen those sadhus over by Crawford Market? One guy's had his arm raised in the air for years. He never sits down, and he's got legs like an elephant. You throw him coins in a little pot. Man, it's a tough way to make a living. So we had fun doing this. I knew that Srila Prabhupada was going to send out some of the other boys to other places in India to take charge. We were only 20 persons, and he wanted to establish centers across India. But I wanted to stay in Bombay. I had heard from others, like Tamal told me about how nasty Delhi was and Calcutta. But I wanted to stay in Bombay. So I worked as hard as I could to impress Srila Prabhupada so he would appoint me to stay in Bombay. At first, we stayed in people's homes, mostly in the Fort District, Malabar Hill. Then we got a place way out in Chambur at the Ram Sharanam Temple. It was too far from town. So we got another life member gave us rooms in his hotel, Sea Palace Hotel, right on in Colaba, just by the Taj Mahal Hotel. And then in January 1971, we got an apartment. Finally got a nice place to stay. It was called Akash Ganga, the seventh floor of a skyscraper. We had two flats, the whole seventh floor. And the rent was 3,000 rupees a month. We said, Prabhupada, can we afford this? Should we do it? He said, yes. He said, take it immediately. That is only three life members a month. So one thing we young Americans knew how to do was put on a show. We had seen some big Pandal programs, a couple of, starting with the Chaupati program we saw. And in Cross Maidan, we saw a big Pandal one day. So we proposed to Srila Prabhupada, we put on a big Pandal there. And he agreed. And he put me in charge. That, over a 10-day period in March and April 1971, over 1 million people came to see Srila Prabhupada and his dancing white elephants. It was a spectacular display. And this is what put the Krishna movement on the map of India. This Cross Maidan. It was spectacular beyond anyone's. No one had ever seen such a show. And here we met also a young American boy from Chicago named Richard Slavin, who, as Radhesham said, went on to become Radhanath Swami. And I remember one thing Radhanath told me. He said he had a picture in his pocket. He had been traveling in India for nearly a year. And he had a picture in his pocket of this beautiful man with his leg crossed, playing a flute with peacock feathers in his hat, in his hair. And he didn't know who this person was. For 9 months, he traveled with this photo, and he didn't know who he was till he saw a copy of the Krishna book at the Cross Maidan. Now, the lesson in this is to remember again how scarce Krishna was in India at that time. If he didn't know who this guy was for 9 months, that means Krishna wasn't here. Only when he saw Krishna book did he understand, this is Krishna. There were no Indian devotees joining us. There had been a couple of Indian boys initiated in Calcutta. But on this side, on the western side, after 6 months of preaching, strong preaching work, we had yet to find one Indian person to become a devotee, to join us. Gradually, maybe it's the natural timidness of Indians, but gradually we broke the ice. The first Indian devotee to join us 6 months after we arrived was a Parsi boy. And Prabhupada called him Mahamsadas. And then at Cross Maidan, there was another young Indian student named Raghunath Patil. Who you now know as Lokanath Swami. So little by little, the Indian community began to join us. So Srila Prabhupada sent his Western devotees out all over India. Gurdas and Jamuna went to Delhi and Vrindavan. Giriraj and Gopal were sent to Madras. Several others went to Calcutta. And I stayed in Bombay, my favorite city. Then in June 1971, the greatest thing that ever happened in my life happened to me. Srila Prabhupada appointed me as his personal secretary. That meant I got to be with him 24 hours a day. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. What more could anyone want than that position? The greatest adventure of my life. So by June 1971, Srila Prabhupada had been in India 8 months. He had sown the seeds across India. And he felt that he could leave India, let the seeds grow a little while, and tend to his other business around the world, his huge worldwide movement. So as the first place we went in June 71 was Moscow. Now, 99% of you weren't around in those days, but the world in 1970 was firmly divided into two camps, communism and capitalism. That was it. And down between the middle of them was called the Iron Curtain. And we were at war, silent, cold war, Russia and America. You couldn't go to Russia. Nobody could go to Russia. It was a closed country, completely closed, like North Korea is today. But Prabhupada had been saying for several years, he said, I must go to Russia. Please help me get to Russia. They are the most entangled by Maya, by material energy, the most entangled people in the world. They need us the most. Nobody could get Prabhupada a visa for Russia. Devotees had been trying for years. Somehow or other, I got us a visa. Myself, Prabhupada, and one other servant, Aravinda. Three of us could go to Russia, to Moscow, for 5 days. But we had to leave day after tomorrow. So that quick, we went to Moscow. We flew to Moscow. Part of the deal was they give you hotel, food, and guided tours. And you pay a package price for that. We didn't know anyone in Russia. We had no plan. There was no itinerary. As we got on the plane to Moscow, I prayed to Krishna, please help Prabhupada. Help make something happen for Prabhupada here. Otherwise, we're simply wasting our time there. The first day we arrived in Moscow, we went up to the hotel room. And from the window in Prabhupada's room, there was a parade going by outside in the street, four floors down, near Red Square, the center of Moscow. Military parade. Hundreds and thousands of soldiers goose-stepping like this. Big guns, artilleries, tanks, rockets, as long as this room, carried on four lorries like that. Hour after hour, this military parade went by Prabhupada's window. And he sat and watched it. He watched the whole thing. At the end, and this was on a Sunday, apparently it happened every Sunday, a parade like this. At the end, Prabhupada turned around to me and he had a little tear in his eyes. He said, you cannot rule a people by fear. Within 20 years, all of this will be gone. The next day, I walked to the bank to change some money. To change some dollars for rubles. One young boy stopped me on the street. He spoke English, and he said, will you change some money with me? I will give you twice what the bank gives you. And for 2 days now, I had been noticing this same guy following me in a suit with a tie, a white shirt, and I thought he was probably the KGB, secret police. So I said, no, I better not. We might get in trouble. I won't change money with you. He said, well, do you have any jeans for sale? Jeans? I'm in a dhoti, shaved head. I said, no, I don't have any jeans. He said, well, do you have any Beatles records? No, I don't, but the spiritual master for the Beatles is up there in that hotel room. Would you like to meet him? I brought this young boy up to Srila Prabhupada. We had 3 days left in Moscow. And in 3 days, I watched Srila Prabhupada impart I saw his mystic power at its most powerful. Srila Prabhupada made this boy a pure devotee in 3 days. Whew. It's like one of those stories from Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? From nothing, this boy became a pure devotee in 3 days. Srila Prabhupada taught him the entire philosophy. He taught him the entire customs of Krishna consciousness, how to act, how to dress. He taught him cooking, what to eat. All of this in 3 short days. I observed it. So I call this chapter in the book, 5 Days That Changed the World. This boy's name was Anatoly. Anatoly was initiated as Ananta Shantidas. And from this tiny beginning, and despite jails, asylums, torture, even government-sponsored killings suffered by those he brought to Krishna consciousness, Ananda Shanti single-handedly created an underground cadre of thousands of Hare Krishna devotees that gradually spread throughout the USSR. By the late 1970s, the KGB had set up a special directorate just to quash the Krishna movement. But the Soviet Empire collapsed almost exactly 20 years after Prabhupada's brief visit, as he predicted it would. Prabhupada never returned to Russia. He didn't have to. For him, 5 days was enough to radically change the consciousness of a great nation. And I am the witness. From Moscow, then, we went on to Paris and San Francisco and London, New York, and then on to London. And in London, a very interesting thing happened. Does anyone know here what the Mensa Society is? Mensa? Mensa is a society based in London. And to belong to this society, you have to have an IQ of 200 or higher. 200 IQ. That means very, very intelligent. This is called the Mensa Society. So one day, the president and the secretary of the Mensa Society came to visit Srila Prabhupada at his rooms in Berry Place, London. I recorded the conversation, and parts of it I've put into the book because it was an amazing spectacle to see these men who are so full of logic and argument and debate. They debated Srila Prabhupada for 2 hours, and he defeated every point they made. By the end of the discussion, they were going like this. We are very impressed, sir. We are very impressed. We are very impressed. Where did you learn this? Where can we find out about this? Like that. So that night, Srila Prabhupada asked me if I had studied philosophy in college. I said, yes. Actually, I majored in German philosophy. He said, okay. Every morning from now on at 8 o'clock, you will come into my room and you will be the Western philosopher, and I will defeat you. So I got a book on summaries of Western philosophers, and we started with Aristotle, Plato, the Greek philosophers, and we went up, this is Western philosophers, went right up to the, so over the next 9 months, every day, Prabhupada and I discussed for 1 hour philosophy, Western philosophy, from the early Greeks right up to the modern existentialists. I've rediscovered those tapes and have summarized the essence of the best ones I thought were the best in this book. Those of you who like philosophy and seeing Prabhupada debate philosophy and defeat everyone he encounters, you'll like these stories. So then from London, we go to Africa. This is my first time seeing Srila Prabhupada in the wilderness, in a savage land, Africa. As our plane started to land, the pilot came on the air and said, sorry, folks, we have to go around one time. There are some giraffes on the airstrip. It was a raw land, Nairobi, Kenya. The British had just been kicked out of there, too, by a very violent movement. And it was a rough place. Indian community was living in fear that they might be next. So to see Prabhupada in action in Nairobi was another very, very wonderful experience, seeing him in the wilderness. I'll just read a little. This is on the plane leaving Africa after 6 weeks on our way back to Mumbai. We are exhausted, but I can't sleep on the plane to Bombay. Thinking about the last 6 weeks in Africa, how cool it is to see Prabhupada in action in a totally unknown environment. He is the pragmatic master of sudden chance, always finding fine balance between risk and impossibility. He knows what to do in every situation. I'm spellbound by his physical beauty, whether he's just awakened with heavy eyelids and a little gray stubble on his chin, or dressed to the nines for TV. I'm in love with his words as he takes on a BBC moderator or Thomas Aquinas. Prabhupada's actions are perfect. He is at once the charming diplomat to the court of the Black King, the mighty corporate manager in horn-rimmed glasses firing memos to his 50 branches. He is the great sage mounting the dais to bring us wisdom. Prabhupada is at once a simple man, just bring me one glass of water, and a game master thinking four moves ahead. He is inscrutable, complex, and also the modest maiden waiting, dressing for the ball. Shall I wear cotton tonight, Shyamasundar, or silk? So, back to India. He's been gone 4 months. In October 1971, we return to India. And in the next 6 months, you will see in this book, and I have seen through my eyes, the most powerful display of Srila Prabhupada's magic in India. In the next 6 months, what he does, what he accomplishes in those 6 months will just astound you. First, there was the Pandal program in Deshapriya Park in Calcutta. Thousands of people came to see him in his hometown. Then to New Delhi, November, 10-day Pandal program in Connaught Circus, which is the very center, the bullseye of Delhi. And at that Pandal program in Delhi, he was introduced each night by the political leaders of the country, the mayor of Delhi, the finance minister of India, the defense minister of India. Each night, one of the prominent personalities of India introduced Srila Prabhupada. It was an amazing affair. 10,000-20,000 people per night listening to Srila Prabhupada talk about politics and education. And while we were there after the Pandal in New Delhi, Prabhupada took us down to Vrindavan. His first visit to Vrindavan with his Western disciples. We were expecting so much. And we were quite disappointed, really. Vrindavan, where's Krishna here? It's just a few dusty streets, some kind of, there were a few kind of old Vaishnavas loitering here and there, but we didn't see much Krishna. We couldn't figure out what this attraction of Vrindavan is. Vrindavan's supposed to be like this from our studies from the books, but we saw it. It took us a while to start seeing Vrindavan through Prabhupada's eyes. This is where Krishna walked. And after 2 or 3 days there, after Prabhupada took us around personally to every site in Vrindavan, showing this is where Krishna did this, this is where Krishna did that. We began to see. We saw at first that small little Radha Damodar temple. This is Radha Damodar temple? And then as Prabhupada explained to us, we could see the love of Vrindavan in his eyes. We finally got it. Now you see what Vrindavan has become. If you can even get into Vrindavan on the roads, now Vrindavan is huge. In those days, it was just a dusty little village. See what Prabhupada has done. At that time, too, one couple named Saraf, Mr. and Mrs. Saraf, they approached Prabhupada and said, "We may want to give you some land, but we haven't decided yet." So Prabhupada kind of put that under the, let that one go, and maybe. So from Vrindavan then, we went back to Bombay. And we had met one man named Mr. Nair. And he had promised Prabhupada that he has a big plot of land out in Juhu that he would sell it to us for a very cheap price. So Prabhupada, always very anxious to see this land. It took us like an hour to drive out there. And I kept saying to Prabhupada, "Why do you want to have a place so far away from Bombay? It's too far out here, Prabhupada. No one will come out here." Prabhupada said, "Let's go see it. I want it." Maybe I'm doing too much here. Am I reading too much? Am I going on and on? Okay. This is a description of Prabhupada's first day walking out at Juhu on the land. Srila Prabhupada inspects the grounds in a serious but light and holiday mood, disguising his pleasure at what he was seeing, bantering with his disciples and Mr. Nair, who points to an apartment and says, "Mahatma Gandhi used to live there." Prabhupada is the suave strategist, wheels in his head churning out points for negotiation. Mr. Nair is obviously pleased to show us the place, his mind wheels cranking out how to rip off this deep pocket Swami and his American disciples, the sons of bankers and millionaires. After the tour, we go back to the Nair's house in Theosophical Colony, about a mile back down Juhu Tara Road toward Bombay for lunch and negotiations. Prabhupada compliments the food, tells a few jokes, and then settles down to business. Very quickly, Prabhupada made a deal for that land, which was at a very, very good price. But, and then you know the story, what goes on, and that will be in Volume 3, the litigation that ensued. But this was the time Prabhupada was planting seeds in India. From Juhu, from Bombay, then we went to Jaipur. In January 1972, we were a month in Jaipur. As guests of the Queen of Jaipur, the Maharani of Jaipur, and the Govind Devji's temple. There we saw Prabhupada in an ancient situation. In an ancient India ruled by pious kings, Prabhupada was king. King in that whole situation. Then we went to next stop. We went to Madras. And there's kind of a funny story I'll read you in the train. We're going from Bombay to Madras. It was called Madras in those days, Chennai, which was a 24-hour, I believe, journey, overnight journey by train. And Prabhupada booked us in a air-conditioned first-class compartment. Just me and Prabhupada. And I was a little unsettled because I'd never spent the night with Prabhupada in the same room. Usually I had a space of my own somewhere separate where I could sleep or read or whatever separately. But this night I'm sleeping in the same compartment with Srila Prabhupada. Well, first thing he does, he organizes the whole thing. And he says, "You sleep on the top bunk, I will sleep below." The day passes by. And it's getting dark. It's night. Prabhupada tells me, he says, "Why don't you go up and sleep now? I will translate." And so I fix, okay. So I'm getting him ready to translate while I go up and sleep. I extinguish all but the reading light above his tiny fold-down writing table. Then I climb up and spread a chadar over my reclined body and drowsing watch Srila Prabhupada below. He puts on his glasses, arranges his books, presses buttons on his dictaphone, plays back yesterday's work, and starts to translate. He speaks slowly and clearly into his microphone, enunciating each word for his faraway editors as eternal wisdom flows from the ageless author in an uninterrupted, continuous stream, rail tracks, clackety-clack, zzzz, from a tiny rewind, ding-ding-ding-ding, receding, a deserted crossing, and I fall into sleep. A far-off moan from the locomotive breaks my slumber. The light is out, and I scoot over to peer over the edge of my bed down to Prabhupada's bunk, expecting to see him sleeping. I've never actually seen him actually asleep. Maybe this may be a first. He's on his side in the starlight, his legs drawn up. And just then his right eye opens and stares up into mine above. And with no expression on his face, as if to say, thought you'd catch me sleeping, huh? From Chennai to Vizag and then Calcutta and then on to Mayapur. It's hard to describe what it was like in Mayapur in those old days. It was it was like a poverty-stricken, closed farming community. It was just a few miles from the border with Bangladesh where there was a civil war going on. Thousands of refugees were pouring into that part of Bengal. There were bandits. There was no law. They flooded. Every year there were floods. But some Prabhupada kept insisting that we should have some land and build something in Mayapur. So over the years, a few devotees have been going there, and they purchased just 3 or 4 acres, finally 3 or 4 acres of a rice field in the middle of nowhere. So Prabhupada says, let us go up there and lay the cornerstone of our new temple. There was one little hut, straw hut, one well, they dug a well, and a little bit of fence along the road. That was it. Prabhupada says, let us lay the cornerstone for our magnificent temple in Mayapur. So we went up. They got some pandal together there, and devotees came from all over India. It was a wonderful ceremony, and Prabhupada laid the first cornerstone, Mayapur. During the day, he would walk us around the fields around there and say, the guest house will be here, the temple over here, and then he would start measuring, walking across in a straight line, and say, put one rock here, and when I stop, put another rock. And he laid out the four corners of all the buildings, and they were huge. Prabhupada, guest house, 300 feet long? Yes, that will come up soon. So on February 29th, mark this date, 1972, Prabhupada laid the first cornerstone of the Mayapur temple. Now, meanwhile, we heard Prabhupada got a phone call from Chiradakshai in Vrindavan that the Sarath people had finally decided to give Prabhupada this land. He told the story that the Sarathas wanted their deities, Radha and Krishna, to make the decision. So they put a pot in front of the deities with 2 slips of paper in it. One said yes and one said no. And they asked Chiradakshai to pull out one paper. Of course, it said yes. They called Prabhupada, and so he made arrangements to go directly to Vrindavan and lay the cornerstone of a second property. This is just 2 weeks after the Mayapur foundation stone. So mark the dates. On February 29th, 1972, he lays the cornerstone at Mayapur. On March 13th, 2 weeks later, he lays the cornerstone at Vrindavan, Ramanreti. This was such an intense 3 days in Vrindavan, such an incredible display of energy that I've described it in the book like a screenplay, as if, because it should be a movie, what Prabhupada did in those 3 days. It was so exciting. I call it Prabhupada's three-ring circus, how he organized all this stuff in 3 days and then laid the second cornerstone. So right after that, we rushed to Juhu. Prabhupada said he had ordered all the devotees in India to come and stay at Juhu because possession is 9/10 of the law. The land itself was all under litigation. It hadn't been paid for it, but Prabhupada thought if we occupied it and installed deities, they can never kick us off. So on March 23rd, he laid the cornerstone at Juhu. So if you take those three dates, February 29th, March 13th, March 23rd, that's scarcely more than 3 weeks. Prabhupada laid the cornerstones for his three major projects in India in 3 weeks' time. By the 1st of April, 1972, Srila Prabhupada's work in India was booming. In just 18 months since his arrival in Bombay with 20 of us, there was this huge development underway in India. And just to kind of summarize what that was all about, I'll read something here. In less than 1 month, Srila Prabhupada has done the impossible. He's laid the cornerstones for his main three temples in India, despite all odds. Naxalite bandits, floods, cold, heat, lack of money, envious opponents, unsupportive godbrothers, caste Goswamis, a communist-leaning central government under martial law with strict rationing of construction materials, our shaky legal standing, and a handful of young but worn-out devotees. The lands we have acquired are so old, with so many contending proprietors, and so large and in such vital locations. To even think of owning these properties is almost surreal. We are recent arrivals on Indian soil, with very little organization or social standing. And yet, despite these obstacles, Prabhupada's unrelenting desire to please Krishna has somehow prevailed. He did it. Seeing all this from the inside, typing his letters, making phone calls, huddled with him in late-night strategy sessions, I am in awe. This is Superman beyond anything yet, and he is just getting started. Well, we're almost at the end here. On April 1st, we left India for Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Japan, Hawaii, and then Los Angeles. And those stories are here also to finish off Volume 2. And that's it. That's the India story, Part 1. There's more about India coming up in the next volume, Volume 3. But I've written Volume 2, Chasing Rhinos with the Swami, for you, the devotees of India, especially for the devotees of India, so you can better understand the imaginable foresight the boundless energy and profound determination of Srila Prabhupada. How in such a short time he laid the groundwork and structure for the vast power and influence of ISKCON in India today. These stories are pure magic, pure adventure. Volume 2 is written like an exciting white-knuckle thriller. Hold on to your seats. As I passed through four years of research and writing these books, I was more amazed each day how this superhuman, perfect person came among us and performed these magic deeds. When you're in it day to day, you don't see it. But now I can see it from afar, 50 years later. Srila Prabhupada's cosmic, dazzling accomplishments. Not just in India, but all over the world. Last November and December, for example, I was in UK, Great Britain, for 6 weeks. What I saw there was totally mind-blowing. Krishna consciousness is so popular in Great Britain still, to this day. If you ask someone, what are the three things about London that you remember most? They will say Big Ben, the black taxi cabs, and the Hare Krishnas. And now seeing your progress here in Pune, this Krishna conscious community, Prabhupada would have loved this. This is what he wanted more than anything. Whole communities built around Krishna consciousness. The deities of Radha and Krishna. That's a wonderful exhibit. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm very optimistic. Becoming in my old age very optimistic. I'm seeing how the truth, once it's revealed in the world, cannot be stopped. It's just going and going and going. Prabhupada always said, many times he said, I don't want many millions of stars. I want one moon. And I'm seeing you here today in this room. So many moons rising here to illuminate the world and to realize what Srila Prabhupada used to say to us every day. He said, you must help me change the world. This is Prabhupada. Must help me change the world. So these books are for you, dear friends. It's in your hands now. You must change the world. There are nearly, in this volume two, nearly 500 pages, 180 photographs, most of which you have never seen before. A very elegant book. And it's been a great labor of love. I hope you'll enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it. So I'll be out in the courtyard here in front of the temple entrance signing books all day.
Oh, here also we have kept a table. Here, here right behind you. Huh? Yeah, one table here, one table there.
Oh, one table here. Where am I going to sit?
Here. They will all come here.
Really?
Yes, we have. Okay. You get the table in the front.
Okay, that's the plan. Okay. And please know that all income from these books will go for printing and distributing Volume 3, which I've already written. I'm just lacking the funds yet to print it, lay it out and print it. And continue these amazing stories of Srila Prabhupada in India. And I hope to bring you this Volume 3 in 2021. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai.
Jai Shyam Sundar Prabhu ki.
Jai.
You see, all of us have experience of reading Prabhupada Lilamrita and getting thrilled and charged up reading Prabhupada pastimes. But now, while Srila Prabhupada's disciples are still on the planet, to recollect such memories, with along with photographs and such detailed account of pastimes of Prabhupada, what can be a better benediction for all of us? And also, if you want to develop determination, a missionary spirit, and also you want to understand how Prabhupada would deal in certain situations, very difficult situations, all these things we learn by reading such books like this. And Shyamasundara Prabhu is one of the early day very intimate disciples of Srila Prabhupada. So, he is ready to sign and give all of you. Ready to put autograph? Yeah, you can come here. Right away Prabhuji is going to start. Please come and pick up a book copy. So, Shyamasundara Prabhu ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna, Krupaya Baithi Rahe. Abhi श्याम सुंदर प्रभु जी के हाथ के द्वारा ही उनके ही किताब का इनॉग्रेशन यहाँ होने वाला है, तो आप बैठे रहिए. श्याम सुंदर प्रभु और राधे श्याम प्रभु मिलके ये किताब का इनॉग्रेशन कर रहे हैं. जो है ये इनॉग्रेशन श्याम सुंदर प्रभु और राधे श्याम प्रभु मिलके कर रहे हैं. तीन बार हरि बोल बोलकर उनका स्वागत करेंगे. हरि बोल, हरि बोल, हरि बोल. श्रीमद 11:30 बजे मराठी भागवतम क्लास इस गणेश श्याम भजन प्रभु द्वारा दिया जाएगा. ये सब जो बुक्स है उसका कीमत 650 रुपीज है. आज डिस्काउंटेड प्राइस 500 रुपीज में मिल रहा है. वॉल्यूम 1 और वॉल्यूम 2 आप यहाँ ले सकते हैं. इसका स्टॉल आज बालोत्सव में भी लगाने वाले हैं और आप अभी भी इसके ऊपर आपका हस्ताक्षर लेकर उनका आप ये प्राप्त कर सकते हैं. आज हम मनाने जा रहे हैं आज